Hello, and welcome to There's Hope with Homeopathy. This monthly show airs the third Friday of each month and focuses on classical homeopathic treatment and how it can benefit your entire family, and especially how it can be a curative therapy in the treatment of autism. My name's Amy Lansky, and I'm broadcasting today from Portola Valley, California, which is in the San Francisco Bay Area. And today's show is going to air on April 20th, 2007, but actually as I'm recording, it is March 29th. I'm doing it a little early because in April I'm going to be traveling to the Joint National Homeopathic Conference in Denver that's put on, well, it's organized by the National Center for Homeopathy. That's going to be a busy time for me. I'm on the board of the National Center, so I'm going to be in Denver for an entire week. I hope some of my listeners may actually come to the conference, and if you do, I hope you came and introduced yourself to me. It's going to be an exciting conference, and by the time you listen to this, it will be over. Next month, for my May show, I will report on the conference and let you know how it went. What else can I tell you that's the current events of the day? Here it's spring. Spring has sprung. It's actually right now, I think it's snowing in Denver. I hope it's not snowing when I'm there. But here in California, the weather has been really gorgeous. One other big event that's just happened this week, and especially big for me, is that the all-new website of the National Center for Homeopathy went live this week. I've been working on it personally. I've been in charge of this project, and I've been working on it for almost 2 years now. And it's very exciting for me. It's a really beautiful new website, completely different, completely revised, modernized compared to the old site. And now it's organized in such a way that you can much better understand and access everything on this site. It's a vast, vast site with hundreds of articles, various databases of information, practitioner information, databases of information about homeopathic appearances in the news, a homeopathic calendar, and for our members, you can access Homeopathy Today, the National Center's magazine. You can access it online, search for keywords. There's a Materia Medica and Repertory online so that you can, you know, read up about homeopathic remedies and even search for specific information from, actually search for remedies that have specific symptoms that you're looking for. So that's all, you know, free to our members, and our membership is only $55 a year. You get the magazine, you get everything. So I really encourage all of you, if you haven't yet, join the National Center for Homeopathy. It's a great organization, and the membership is, I think, a bargain. And in the coming year, we're going to be beefing up this website even more to have bulletin boards and blogs. I didn't mention that we already have chats, monthly chats. It's really a great website, so check it out, nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org. I have a lot I want to cover today. Today's show is going to be a continuation of the February show, which started talking about different methodologies of homeopathy. You know, this show is really about classical homeopathic treatment, but many of you are seeing homeopaths that aren't really classical homeopaths, or your classical homeopath may use different methods of homeopathy. And I think it's really important that everybody understand what, you know, why a practitioner is doing what they're doing. If the practitioner is doing something that really isn't classical homeopathy, you should know that. And that's why Chapter 6 of my book is focused on explaining these various methodologies that veer off classical homeopathic treatment. And I'm going to be continuing that today, and I think this is going to be a three-parter, so I think I'm going to have to talk about it either in the May show or the June show. I'll probably have one interview show for one of those two. So I'm not sure which one's going to be the interview show yet. So before I get to it, because I have a ton of material and I really would like to cover it all, let me just remind you that this show is based really as a short course on my book, Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy, which is usually the best-selling introductory book on homeopathy on Amazon, and it's used as a patient education book. It's even used as a textbook in the homeopathic schools. And really, it's a general introduction, not a how-to book, but a general introduction to homeopathy. So if you're interested in this show, you'll be more interested in buying this book. And you can find out all about that by going to the Impossible Cure website. So it's impossiblecure.com. On that website, you'll also find lots of resources and information. There's a page about autism treatment. There's archives, pointer to archives of the past archives of the show, which I really encourage you to listen to. Listen to the whole archives. There, I think there's about 24 or so shows in there, all free. You can access that by going to the home page. On the right side, there's a button that leads you to the archives. There's the Cure Stories database, which is stories that some of my readers have contributed about their own experiences. You can find pointers to referral lists to find a homeopath, and you can always email me, Lansky@ImpossibleCure.com or alansky@autism1.org, and ask me for a referral, give me feedback or questions you might have. I usually get back to everybody within a week or so when they write to me. So, so let's get started, because I really want to cover everything I've set up for today. So last time, I'm going to do a little recap from last time. In the February show, I started by covering the homeopathic approach to epidemics, both the classical method and other less classical methods. So, the more classical method is the genus epidemicus method. Then I talked about isopathic remedies, which are remedies made from things that are presumed to have be related to the disease. So let's say remedies made from diseases and used as a prevention against the disease, or from allergens to use as a prevention against allergies. And then I talked about tautopathy, which is similar to isopathy, which is using a remedy made from a substance that you know has poisoned you. So an instance of tautopathy would be using, if you know your child was vaccine damaged or damaged by thimerosal or had arsenic poisoning or mercury poisoning, etc., then you would give a remedy made from that substance. And that actually is closer to, it really is within classical homeopathy. Last time I also discussed the difference between purely classical homeopathy, and that is treating based on the law of similars. And what is the law of similars? Again, always good to review it, this is the law of homeopathy. It's what the word homeopathy means. And that is, in order to cure a person with certain symptoms, you would give them a highly diluted amount of the substance of a substance which causes those symptoms. So what that means is, unless you're giving remedies based on somebody's symptoms, on the symptoms they're actually experiencing, you're not really practicing homeopathy, really, or certainly you're not practicing classical homeopathy. So many of the things I'm going to be talking about today are methods of using diluted potentized substances, in other words, homeopathic remedies that you can buy, but using them not based on the symptoms that a person is really experiencing, but instead on some theory that you have about the disease or how those remedies can be applied. And for this reason, this veers away from classical homeopathic treatment and from a strict interpretation of the law of similars. So let me begin with one of the ways that many people use that diverges somewhat from the law of similars, which is to use multiple remedies at the same time, combination remedies. And this is very common. I mean, in fact, my entree into homeopathy, the first time I ever used anything to do with homeopathy, was buying some kind of combination allergy remedy, I think it was, in the health food store. And in this case, these multiple combination remedies is what you get when you get these homeopathic formulas, so to speak. And the use of combination remedies goes all the way back to the time of Hahnemann. Hahnemann was against it, but it was controversial even to that time. And in this case, it's still loosely classical, but it is frowned upon by classical homeopaths. Usually, such remedies are given using two strategies. One is that the combination contains a bunch of remedies, all of which have something to do with some target formula, target symptom. So let's say it's hay fever, or okay, let's say it's like insomnia. Let's say it's insomnia is the symptom that you're trying to address. So they'll find a bunch of remedies that are commonly that the symptom of insomnia is a prominent symptom in that remedy, and they'll choose several of them, and they'll just combine them into a single remedy and give the person that remedy. And this is what you might call a shotgun approach. You're throwing a bunch of different remedies at a person, hoping that one of them is the right remedy for that person. Moreover, you're targeting just a single symptom. Not the whole person, not all of their symptoms at once. So what does this mean? This means that the person who's taking these things is taking a bunch of remedies. None of them may be really the correct remedy for them as an individual. Some of them may be really the wrong remedy for that person, but you're hoping that that one of them is the right one and will address their symptoms. This symptom of insomnia in this case. Now, this is usually done in this over-the-counter way in very low potencies. People who do this might take them every day to, let's say, treat their insomnia. And what you'll find is that this approach sometimes gets results, because homeopathy does work. And if all these remedies match the symptom of insomnia, it will probably affect your insomnia. You'll feel better. But it's a palliative approach. It's like taking, you know, any kind of palliative allopathic medicine. It'll probably subdue the symptom, but it's not going to cure you, very unlikely to cure you. The only way in which this kind of homeopathy would be truly curative, in that you'll no longer have insomnia, period, and you don't have to take the remedy anymore, is if one of those remedies in the combination was your true similimum, really matched you overall. But that's actually highly unlikely. So this kind of treatment can get palliative results. It can work on a short term, and that's what it'll say in the bottle, don't take it forever. But there's also inherent dangers in this method as well. One is that it's not going to be curative, very unlikely that one of those remedies in the combination will be your similimum. So, secondly, you don't know which of those remedies in the combination is the one that's really helping you. So, if a homeopath, let's say, gives this kind of formula to their patients, they have no idea which remedy in the formula is the correct remedy. So you're not really getting any information about what's helping the person, if it is helping the person. And third, there may be interactions between these remedies. I've seen combinations sold, not over the counter in the store, but online or something, with dozens of remedies in them, with high potencies of pretty serious remedies. I mean, I would never take such a thing. Looking at these formulas, most classical homeopaths would look at them in horror and think, what are people doing taking these things? They might even combine remedies that are known to interact badly with each other, or to antidote each other and cancel each other in very high potencies. From a homeopathic classical homeopathic point of view, these kinds of combinations can truly be dangerous, and homeopathic remedies do have effects. The way we test to see what remedies do is by taking them repeatedly as in a test. Homeopaths usually undergo these tests, a part of these training, where they take a remedy repeatedly to see what it does, and that's how we find out what remedies do. So if you as a patient are experimenting on yourself with these combination remedies, taking them day in and day out, you might very well also get approving of the remedies in that combination. Now, the ones that are sold in the health food store are usually very low potencies. You take them for a short period of time. I doubt they would have any, that they're very safe, certainly safer than allopathic medicines. But if you're taking some of these strange combinations with high potencies constantly, this is, in my view, very ill-advised. Now, there's a second approach to combination homeopathy where you go to an actual homeopath and the homeopath collects your symptoms, and let's say they personally can't find a remedy that fits you overall, so they'll tell you to take in combination several remedies that kind of cover your case. This is also frowned upon in classical homeopathy. It's always weird. A classical homeopath is trained to choose the best matching remedy, see what it does. If it's not correct, then move on to another remedy. So the combination approach is frowned upon because you don't know, you're not getting information about the treatment of the person. You don't know which remedy is having the effect. Nevertheless, some homeopaths do this, so I just want to let you know that this can be the case, and it is not considered within the realm of classical homeopathy. Now, that's different than sometimes alternating remedies, even on the same day. Let's say the homeopath says, take this one remedy in the morning, take another remedy at night. That is within the realm of classical homeopathy. Or let's say you're in a acute, like, first aid situation, then people will tell you to take multiple remedies in those situations. Let's say for a puncture wound, they might say take Ledum, and then if there's swelling, take Apis. That is considered fine in classical, but to use this as a regular methodology of constitutional chronic treatment, that is not done by most classical homeopaths. So that's combination remedies. Okay, the other things I want to cover today, the first one I'm going to be covering is specifics, then I'm going to move on to organ remedies, then on to cell salts, and then on to the ever-controversial sequential therapy. And the reason I'm going into to approaching sequential therapy by talking about these other things first is because sequential therapy tends to use elements of all these other methods that I'm talking about first. So let's see how far we get. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is the use of specifics. Now this is fairly classical. And what a specific is a remedy that is highly associated with a particular symptom. It's usually very successful for the treatment of a particular type of ailment. And because of that, it becomes known as a specific, or something that is one of the main remedies you should consider for that problem. So obviously this is classical in the sense that that this remedy really does match this problem. The use of specifics, though, is sort of a knee-jerk reaction. Somebody comes into your office and has this problem, so you say, oh, I'll just give them that because that's the specific for this problem. But it may not be the right remedy for that person. I mean, they may have all these other symptoms in their picture, which really points to a different remedy that might help them more. So let me just tell you a bunch of specifics, and you'll realize that a lot of these specifics are for acute situations. So, you know, the most obvious specific is arnica, and I've talked about arnica on the show. Arnica for trauma injuries. So that's a specific for, like, you have a fall or a bruise or any kind of body tissue trauma. Arnica specific almost always works. Another one is Kali bichromicum, or Kali Bic, some people call it, which is a specific for sinus infections. This is one that you know, if you yourself are having some sinus infections and you don't go to a homeopath, I would say go to the health food store, get some Kali bichromicum and try it out in low potency. Another one is Ignatia for grief or hysteria. And this is a really important remedy. Let's say you have a loss in the family, you're having a sudden grief, take some Ignatia. It really might help you. Another one is for motion sickness. There's a couple remedies that are specifics for this. Cocculus, indicus, and tabacum, made from tobacco. So these are both motion sickness remedies, and they may have slightly different indications, but they're considered specifics. Another one is apis, made from the bee for swelling. Ledum, I mentioned that already, for puncture wounds. Aconite for shock and fear situations. Now, like I said, a lot of these specific remedies are for what we call acute situations. And they work well here because most people in an acute situation, when they have trauma, when they get bit by a spider or have swelling or have motion sickness, most people tend to have the same symptoms. Acute situations aren't as individualized as chronic situations. And because of that, certain remedies work for almost everyone because everybody in that situation is having the same symptoms. And that's why specifics are important. But it's important to realize that another remedy might really be the best remedy for you, especially in a chronic condition. So let's look at sinus problems again. Or let's say you have chronic problems with motion sickness. It's true that Kali bichromicum might alleviate your sinus problems, or cocculus or tobacco might alleviate your motion sickness, you know, palliatively. But why do you have motion sickness? Why do you tend to get sinus infections? Really, if you go to a homeopath, that's what you really want to treat. You don't want to just palliatively treat your sinus infection. You want to never get another sinus infection for the rest of your life, and that's the goal of the homeopath. And the only way that can be done is by finding the remedy that matches you overall to remove this disease tendency from you. So specifics and some are a handy kind of quick method of homeopathy that work in acute situations. And you know, a homeopath can't live without these things. They're really important in crisis. For example, after 9/11 and Hurricane Katrina and the tsunami, just two or three remedies were important for nearly everybody coming to a homeopath. And homeopaths were out there. There were clinics set up. I think they're still operating for the survivors of the tsunami. And they were out there helping the survivors of Katrina, and certainly in New York, 9/11. If you go to the National Center for Homeopathy website, you can see articles in Homeopathy Today that talk about the treatment of the shock and the grief after these tragedies. And certain specific remedies were helpful for almost everyone, including aconite, including Ignatia. So these are very important remedies in these kinds of situations. Okay, so now we go a little even further out on the spectrum. And in some ways, we might call it further out into the border between homeopathy and herbalism. And this is the use of very low potency remedies given regularly, a little bit in a more allopathic way. And the first kind of treatment is called use of organ remedies. Organ remedies are remedies that have an affinity to certain organs. In other words, in the proving of these remedies, they are associated with symptoms that pertain to a specific organ. For example, the remedy Chelidonium, it's made from a yellow poppy called celandine. So the remedy is Chelidonium, Chelidonium. It is highly associated with symptoms of liver disease. And for this reason, some homeopaths, if somebody comes in with liver disease, might think of giving chelidonium in low potency regularly to help with their liver disease. This isn't a classical approach because it's not individualized, but the homeopaths that do this kind of work believe that it helps to strengthen or cleanse the liver. And some homeopaths will do this in conjunction with classical treatment because they worry that the classical treatment will, as the person recovers, it will be a strain on their liver as it's cleansed or whatever. And so they'll give also, let's say in this case, chelidonium in low potency regularly to sort of what they call support the organ. So sometimes this method's called organ support. So that's what that means. Now, sometimes, let me say again, this kind of method is loosely homeopathic. I mean, these remedies do match symptoms of the organ. Another related method is called organotherapy, and this is the use of what's called sarcodes, S-A-R-C-O-D-E-S, and that is remedies made from the organ themselves. So here's an example. An example is the use of the remedy thyroidinum, which is made from thyroid. And so let's say you're having thyroid disease, and you might give thyroidinum. Or there's another remedy made from called pituitrin, made from pituitary gland. So this is organotherapy. Actually, there is a story in my book about this on page 156. Let me find it here. Actually, a lot of this information I'm telling you about, it can be found in this book written by Ian Watson called The Methodologies of Homeopathy. It's a very interesting book. And in this book, he writes, I treated a boy who had a brain tumor removed and who recovered generally, but his growth was stunted. This was thought due to the tumor having impinged upon his pituitary gland. Constitutional treatment helped him generally, but didn't affect his growth, which was the main problem. So I gave him pituitrin 30 in the 30C potency, and he started to grow normally soon after starting the remedy. So that's an example of organotherapy. Okay, another method in this case also remedies that are often used on a regular basis in low potencies are the cell salt remedies. And sometimes you might hear them called Schussler's cell salts. They were devised by a homeopath named Dr. William Schussler in 1873. And these are remedies made from mineral salts that are commonly found in the body. So these are all mineral remedies, like calc sulf, all these things that are naturally occurring mineral salts found in your body, and they're also have been proven as remedies, and they've had normal provings like any other remedies, and are associated with you know, Materia Medica entries with symptoms in every area of the body, and one of those remedies may very likely be your remedy. But if they're given as sort of a in low potency regularly as a kind of vitamin, then this is not really classical homeopathy. And there are some practitioners who believe in doing this if they think you have some kind of deficiency in this mineral salt in your body. They'll say, oh, take this homeopathic version of it as a vitamin in a way. This is definitely not classical homeopathy. From a classical point of view, no remedy should just be taken as a vitamin regularly, day in and day out, because then you will, even if it's in low potency, eventually you will start proving this remedy or get symptoms of this remedy. But nevertheless, these cell salts can be very important remedies, very useful remedies, and can have wide-ranging effects if they're used based on the symptoms of the person, used from a classical perspective. And there's actually a story in my book about, I'm not going to read it here because I want to move on, but about the use of just the cell salt remedies, and there's only, I think, 12 of them, as a way of treating people in general. There was an experiment done in Nepal by David Little, who's a homeopath who practices in India and Nepal in very remote areas, and he did an experimental study with somebody where they went out to this village and they trained the villagers to use the 12 cell salts, and over a period of 6 months he basically restricted himself to using these cell salt remedies as in a classical way, but using only these remedies, and he was able to treat like really severe diseases this way, not just nutritional deficiencies, but really severe diseases like meningitis and dysentery and things like that. So that's an amazing story. I think it's in chapter 9 of my book. Okay, so that brings us to sequential therapy, and I got about 10 minutes, so you can at least get a good start on this. So a method that incorporates all of these things, classical ideas, the use of specifics, the use of isopathy and tautopathy, the use of organ therapy, the use of all these things, is sequential therapy. People often ask me, what about sequential therapy? Because a lot of practitioners of sequential therapy are active in the autism community, and kids are helped with sequential therapy because, I mean, kids are helped with all methods of homeopathy. My view is that the method of sequential therapy can be much too harsh for these kids, and that it can cause unnecessary suffering, and that my view is that I would prefer that one person try classical homeopathic treatment, and preferably classical homeopathic treatment with a practitioner who is open to using other methodologies if necessary, such as isopathy. Using that approach first rather than going strictly into sequential therapy, or to use a sequential therapist who's a little more classically oriented, isn't going to use this methodology in a highly formulaic way. Because the things I've read about it, some of the things kids have improved, but after quite a lot of suffering. So also, before I start talking about this, I want to say that what I'm saying is based on my own personal understanding from what I've read. I am not a sequential therapist. I am not an expert on it. So I'm just going to be giving you my view, my honest opinion. If you want to read a book about the sequential approach to autism treatment, there's a book written by Rudy Verspoor and Patty Smith called Autism, The Journey Back, and I'm going to be quoting from this book. I have read the book. So the root of sequential therapy, actually, the book by Rudy Verspoor, I'll talk about this, is usually the method called Heilkunst, which is a sort of derivative from sequential therapy. So this, anyway, all of these kinds of treatments are rooted in a practitioner named Elmiger. And Elmiger came up with this method called sequential therapy. And the idea behind it is that disease in the vital force is built up as a sequence of well-defined layers that then must be removed in that same sequence. So if you have a sequence of events, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then you would have to treat those events in reverse order, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, that this has to be done regardless of the symptoms that a patient is displaying before you in your office. So this is what I would call treating based on a theory about disease instead of based on the symptoms of the patient. So a sequential therapist will take, the practitioner will take a very thorough timeline of the history of the patient, these various events that happened to them. So for example, a vaccine injury, a surgery, taking certain medications, a grief, a shock, a trauma. They'll take a timeline, and then they will treat that, what they call treat the timeline in reverse order. And they often do so using specifics with isopathic remedies, etc. So, for example, let's say you had, like, your history was something like you had a grief, and you had a trauma, and then you had a grief, and then you were taking this medicine that was hurting you, and then you had this surgery, and then you said you had a vaccine injury. Well, they would treat each of those in reverse. Let's say they treat the vaccine injury first by giving you the vaccine in potency using the kind of a tautopathic method, or they might give you a nosode for the disease, whatever. Then now we would go back and we treat the surgery. We would, let's say, give an isopathic remedy for the anesthesia, or a specific for anesthesia and for the trauma of the injury and for the injection, whatever. And then let's say we have to go back in time now and you were taking cortisone, so that you would give you cortisone in potency. Then before that you were having, you had a grief episode, let's say you're parent died, so then you would give Ignatia for that, or Natrum Muriaticum, which is another specific for grief. And then we go back to some original trauma that you had, some accident, and give Arnica, etc. So this gives you an idea of the way sequential therapy progresses. Usually there's a fixed schedule and the way the remedies are given, often a month apart. You treat each of the layers a month apart. There's often a fixed use of remedies and potencies. Different practitioners might have different methods, but they will often give a sequence of potencies. The same potencies are given to everyone, regardless. So from a classical point of view, there is truth in the idea that there are layers built up on a person. The idea of this is really taken from one of our most famous homeopaths named Herring, who said that that disease is cured from the most recent to the most distant events in the past, but also from top down, the top of the body downward, etc. This is the way that cure happens. But from a classical point of view, yes, these are, I would call, heuristics or guidelines to treatment. But, you know, we don't really understand the vital force. We can just guess or form theories about it. The only clue to what's really going on in your body is the symptoms you're displaying. So to treat something based on a theory about how the vital force works from a classical point of view is not as useful or as safe as just treating on what the symptoms the person is having right before you. For example, I mean, you might give a remedy, and that remedy might clear many layers. You don't have to treat all these layers that you think. It might just cure everything going into the past. So you really don't know what a remedy will do until you've given it and then see what symptoms come up. So from the classical point of view, this sequential therapy method is too routine. They'd say, oh, this is routinization. It's treating every patient the same way. It doesn't sufficiently take into account the patient's actual symptoms as they're sitting before you in the office. It often doesn't look at a wide enough range of remedies, because it could be any remedy in the homeopathic materia medica that might be the right remedy for a particular grief or trauma or shock. It really depends on the person. And it doesn't tailor the potency selection enough. Now, as far as the work of Verspoor and Smith, they have a system they call Heilkunst, and this uses sequential therapy, and I think they use homeopathy too, regular classical too, and they throw in a bunch of other ideas as well. Verspoor has studied Hahnemann's writings, and he believes he has uncovered what Hahnemann's real methods were, and that those methods are different than the 200 years of classical homeopaths who've been studying and following Hahnemann for the past 200 years. So somehow he feels he has, 200 years later, uncovered the real meaning in Hahnemann's works that all the preceding homeopaths have not figured out. So Verspoor also states and believes that there cannot be side effects from remedies. In other words, that all the effects are healing reactions. From a classical point of view, this is not true. It is possible to get non-helpful reactions from remedies, because that's what approving is. If a person is undergoing the test of a homeopathic remedy, you know, as part of the drug test for the remedy, they are given this remedy multiple times, an incorrect remedy for them, and they start getting symptoms, and that's how we know what the remedies do. So by the same token, remedies can have these effects, and if you give the wrong remedy to a patient over and over, well, they will develop approving as well. So, you know, reading through Verspoor's book, he certainly has helped people using his method, but from the classical point of view, these patients often suffered from provings, very strong effects from the remedies. So Verspoor's, the Heilkunst methodology for treating autism is basically based on a three-phase methodology. First, he gives all the vaccines that were given to the child in potency according to a certain regimen and a certain potencies as a method of detoxification, he feels. So the method is really very heavily based on a method of detoxification. After this phase, he gives a sequence of nosode remedies for the various disease tendencies that people have, and he gives them all the same nosodes to everybody to treat the same miasms and the same potencies. So that's another phase. And this is another form of kind of detoxification in his mind, or healing of the underlying disease tendencies for the child. And then he says the child enters this, what he calls the chthonic realm, which is a realm of sort of very deep, dark kind of symptomatology. And these are remedies that are associated with usually very troubling behavioral symptoms. And it is true that these remedies he gives for this, what he calls the chthonic realm, are remedies that are very important in the treatment of autism. So, but the question is this methodology the right approach for every child? I don't think so. So I'll just read to you a quote from his book. These parents contributed to this book, so they really feel this helped their son. They said they had they were using Heilkunst for about 18 months. And it says, in this period, he has completed the treatment of various shocks and traumas on his timeline, has gone through one full round of the chronic miasms or inherited disease tendencies. He's just beginning his second round of miasms. So I guess he treats each of the miasms in one round and another round over and over, probably with stronger remedies. In this time, he has experienced many up and downs, but overall more ups than with any other treatments we've tried previously, and we've tried many things. So this is helping them, but I want to just give you a feeling for the kind of reactions he's gotten. Okay, I'm quoting now. After 2 weeks after taking the MMR remedy, Brad exposed himself at recess to three girls from his school. This kind of thing had never happened before. When the school principal called, she said that if it had been any other boy, he would have been automatically suspended, but because it was Brad with his disability, this would not be the case, but they wanted him to leave for that afternoon. This was the chthonic realm. When I called the Hahnemann Clinic office, they made some adjustments to Brad's remedies, yet this incident was followed by two similar incidents when we had company at our home. My practitioner said this sexually oriented behavior was likely coming from somewhere very deep within Brad, a realm of deep fear common to autistic children, which is known in Heilkunst as the chthonic realm. Completely mortified, several months later, when I met another practitioner who specializes in autism at the Hahnemann Clinic and recounted this event, the comment that I should be happy he was going through this now instead of at the age of 20 gave me a new perspective. Wait. here's another case. The next trauma remedy was for the vaccines he had at the age of 18 months. And this kid did have very severe vaccine reaction. So it was no surprise that he had a strong healing reaction following the homeopathic remedy, but we were unprepared for the extent of its severity. At first, his father took the brunt of it. One day, about a week after ingesting the remedy and after being told not to stand so close to the TV, Brad began hitting his father in the head as forcefully as he could, shouting and screaming. His behavior worsened at school, and for the next 2 weeks, he was spitting at, poking, and shoving his classmates, was loud, hyper, and inattentive. This culminated in a day when he had a meltdown trauma and stripped his shirt off, lay on the floor in the middle of his classroom while his teacher was instructing. Around the same time, during car rides with me, he began undoing his seatbelt, flailing around the back seat, hitting and kicking me while I was driving, a common occurrence when he was 3 or 4 years old. At the same time, he developed that same deep red raw rash on his cheeks, nose, chin. The same rash could be found on his thumb, which he began sucking. He also developed chronic foul-smelling explosive diarrhea of the consistency of brown water. This diarrhea continued unabated for 6 months. One day he went for his monthly appointment with his craniosacral therapist. When I came to pick him up, the therapist related that during the treatment, Brad had begun crying like a baby, shouting that the needle was hurting him. The therapist had not been informed that Brad was detoxing his 18-month vaccines. This incident amazed me and proved not only how powerful sequential homeopathic treatment is, but how profoundly it works on the subconscious and other deep emotional levels. We had detoxed Brad for his vaccines three times before in 3 different kinds of treatments with 3 different homeopaths. We had seen immense healing reactions each time, but nothing of this deep subconscious level reaction and clearing. So we have here a case where this remedy is doing something, but it's way too harsh. I mean, from my point of view, there's no need for that kind of suffering. 6 months of diarrhea. A more gentle approach could be taken. This is simply my view, and this is why I say go to a classical homeopath who will incorporate some of these ideas, or to a sequential homeopath who will tailor them to the patient. You know, after my book came out, I received a note or an email from one of the Heilkunst people saying they were very opposed to my book because it was misleading people to thinking classical homeopathy could treat autism, and that we gave my son sequential homeopathy by accident. This is just false, okay, false. Over the time when Max was being treated, the primary remedy he took for 2 years was carcinosin, as many of you know. This is a nosode remedy. He never was detoxed for any of his vaccines, so he never took vaccines and potency. He took this one nosode remedy. It was selected strictly based on his symptoms. It was done in very gentle potencies. He never had any kind of harsh detoxification reactions whatsoever. After this period, he did the remedies that have helped him. He's taken just a few other remedies over time, and probably his constitutional remedy that he still takes very occasional is hyoscyamus, which is a remedy in among the quote-unquote chthonic realm remedies, but he's just took it like once or twice a year. He never had a huge explosive reactions like this. So in other words, with just 2 or 3 key remedies over a 10-year period, my son was cured of autism. I know this was an ideal case. We were very lucky, but the homeopath was a classical homeopath. He wasn't doing any kind of detoxification. He wasn't giving, in his case, vaccines and potencies, even though that can be helpful. It may be the right remedy for many children. And in other words, he wasn't being given sequential therapy. He just happened to take remedies that sequential therapists tend to use in an order in which a sequential therapist might tend to use, but not according to any formula. Simply, the remedies were based on the symptoms he was having, and that's how it was given. And there were no horrible aggravations, no heavy dosing, no fixed regimen. So a classical homeopath, I just want to reiterate now and conclude, will pay attention to the timeline, often will use isopathic or tautopathic remedies or nozodes if necessary, if that's what's called for. A nozode might be the constitutional remedy, which it was in Max's case. And we'll give the remedy based on the symptoms that the child is expressing, not based on some theory about the disease. And we'll tailor the dosing to the vital force of the child, so there won't be any fixed regimens. So in my view, this is the safest approach, and this certainly is the safest first approach. If this approach doesn't work, if one homeopath doesn't succeed, you might try another homeopath. That doesn't mean that classical homeopathy has failed. Maybe means that homeopath has failed or that you need a new, fresh perspective. But if it's not doing it for you, then certainly go try sequential homeopathy as well. So I'm not opposed to any method if it's curing your kid, but all I say is there's no need for great suffering. So that's about all I have time for. I did cover what I wanted to cover. So I will be speaking to you in May, either with an interview show or with a continuation of this show, continuation of other methods of homeopathy. And also a report on the National Center's conference. I'm excited about that. So that's about it. Just remind you to check out ImpossibleCure.com, also NationalCenterForHomeopathy.org, and also the Yahoo group and website of the Homeopathy for Special Needs Children, which is HomeopathySNC.org. So in the meantime, have a great spring, and remember, there really is hope with homeopathy.